Then you have a child who gets his own way and he brings shame to his mother. How that's going to happen will be developed. Verse 16, when the wicked increase, transgression increases. But the righteous will eventually see their fall. But in the meantime, society is going to be affected by these wicked, undisciplined children who get let loose on society, and transgression will increase. Verse 17, correct your son and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Verse 18, where there is no vision. The word vision should be translated as revelation. If you notice in the margin, it will suggest that at verse 18, where there is no revelation. What is a revelation? It's talking about the communication of truth. Where there is no communication of truth, revelation of divine viewpoint, the result, the people are unrestrained, which indicates they have their own way. They do what they want to do. Okay, now with that little bit of background, now to Proverbs 30. Verses 11 through 14 gives us the chain of moral revolution. Your NASB says there is a kind of man. If you look in the margin there, you'll see that it says generation. There is a generation of man. Verse 11. We're talking about the progress of moral revolution as one generation follows another without moral instruction and discipline. It begins with the one who curses his father and does not bless his mother. This then is the opposite of the commandment, isn't it? Honor your father and mother. This person does not honor, but he curses and he does not bless. As a result of that, by the way, this not only does this communicate a progress of moral revolution, decay and revolution as generations progress, but it also communicates the development of moral revolution within the soul of an individual as he progresses from one stage to another. And it begins early in his life when he fails to follow a fifth commandment. So there is a generation of man who curses his father and does not bless his mother. The next stage is verse 12. There is a generation who is pure in his own eyes. So this is the next thing. He comes out, he leaves the home, and he says, I'm somebody. I am really it. He has no respect for authority. He's lost that total focus, and he thinks that he is God's gift to the world. So he's pure in his own eyes, and yet he's not washed from his own filthiness. The word filthiness is a little bit stronger than the way they have translated it. Okay? The word is tsoa. Looks like this. T-S, long O, capital A-H for the ah sound, tsoa. It means either vomit or dung. And what this is saying is that this person who really thinks he's pure in his own eyes, he's covered all over with dung, or he's covered all over with vomit. And he looks at him and says, oh, I'm really somebody. And yet, he's just covered with this filthiness. This then is the concept of arrogant self-deception. Arrogant self-deception. The Greek represents it by the word phusiasis. Okay? The guy who thinks he has something that he doesn't. Okay? The false pregnancy concept. Verse 13. This progresses then as this person, in his arrogant self-deception, verse 13, there is a generation, oh, how lofty are his eyes, and his eyelids are raised in arrogance. This then is arrogant rebellion. This is an advance in arrogant self-deception. Self-deception starts it, I shouldn't say, follows upon the rejection of parental authority, the rejection of those moral standards. Then from this arrogant self-deception, he starts to express arrogant rebellion, and that's communicated by the lofty eyes and the eyelids raised up in arrogance. Notice the phrase in arrogance is not there, so it's just raised up. So lofty eyes, eyelids raised up. This is the guy who's looking to control, looking to revolt, looking to take over. And from there, verse 14, there is a generation whose teeth are like swords, and his jaw teeth like knives, to devour the afflicted from the earth and the needy from among men. This should communicate to you violence. From here, he resorts to violence to get what he wants, even to the point of stepping all over other people, those who are in need, those who may be weaker than he is, to devour the afflicted from the earth. So this is a frantic and violent search for happiness and self-fulfillment. Frantic, he just got to keep grabbing, keep looking, keep pursuing. Violent, because he cannot find any satisfaction, he resorts to taking what other people have. And that almost always results in some kind of violence. So, what that results in then is verses 15 through 17. The rebellion continues. The moral revolution continues. We have verse 14, the person who is involved with a frantic and violent search for his happiness, for his self-fulfillment. This leads to what follows. The leech has two daughters. Give, give. In other words, the leech, this person has now turned into a leech. He wants to take from society. He wants to possess the value, the resources of society for himself, and he wants to possess them on his own terms. To communicate this insatiable desire and pursuit on the part of this moral rebel, the writer says there are three things that will not be satisfied, four that will not say enough. These are illustrations of this moral rebel, because he cannot satisfy himself. He cannot find fulfillment, and yet he continues to pursue it. And so he keeps grabbing, keeps grabbing. For the first illustration, verse 16, Sheol. Sheol is the grave, and that's where the dead people go. And see, Sheol is never filled up, is it? People just keep on dying and dying and dying as the years go by. It doesn't seem like, hey, don't you got enough people? Why do people keep dying and go to Sheol? Okay. So the point is that death is never satisfied, is it? People just keep on dying, keep on dying. The only thing that will interrupt that, of course, will be the return of Jesus Christ, and that's a temporary, that interrupts it for the church. But then death continues to have sway on the world for another thousand some years, even though it will be greatly curtailed during the thousand-year kingdom. The second illustration, the barren womb. The woman who has no child. This is in the context of this culture, okay, where it was a big thing. I mean, that was it. The women wanted children. That was the most important thing for them. And so as long as their womb was barren, they were constantly wanting a child. I want a child. And there was never any satisfaction. And as long as the womb is barren, that woman would be unsatisfied. The third example is earth that is never satisfied with water. No matter how much it rains, even at Noah, except in Noah's time, but that's the exception because God said he'd never again flood the earth with water. So this is viewing that. Water comes down, I don't care how much it rains, it will never ever flood the earth. It goes somewhere, doesn't it? It eventually seeps into the earth, goes to the ocean. So the earth is never satisfied with water. And then the fire, fourth illustration, the fire never says enough. Once the fire is going, as long as there is fuel, nothing is going to stop that fire. The fire is not going to burn a tree and then say, I'm done. It's going to jump to the other tree. And it's going to keep on going, never satisfied. This is the moral rebel. He never has enough. He's got to continually consume. And so then we return to this person who we started looking at in verse 11. At verse 17, the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother. See how he just came right back to the same guy. The person that started with rejection of parental authority. He mocks a father, scorns a mother. His end will be a violent end. The ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, what?
I have a question.
Okay.
Because they mention generation up there. Is it like in general a generation or is it like...
Okay, there's two ways to look at it. Okay, two applications. It is a progression from generation to generation. As each generation gets worse, okay, then a society degenerates to the point of it basically being rejected, okay, by God. But then the application is also to an individual who progresses in these stages of revolution, moral revolution, okay? And so this can be referring to one person as he just progresses and it gets worse and worse for him, and finally he ends up with a very violent, very lonely, and miserable death. The ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. See, two things are communicated by that. Violence and isolation. See? The ravens of the valley. What's this guy doing in the valley? Remember, it's symbolic, but what does out in the valley communicate? Isolation. Lonely. The moral rebel lives a very lonely life. He has no friends. He has no one he can really associate with other than those of like mind. But those of like mind will turn on him as soon as they get a chance because that's their nature. It's the way they are. So no one can trust one another. Okay, so you can see just by this passage alone how important that fifth commandment is. It's very important to train children up in the moral instruction of the Lord and teach them the principles of reverence and respect. Okay, let's go back to Exodus. Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. We don't need to take too much time on this one. It's very simple, other than to make a couple clarifications. King James translation, which is probably the most popular translation even yet today, translates this as, "You shall not kill." Okay, there is a Hebrew word for kill. Q-A-T-A-L, katal. In fact, katal actually becomes the pattern for learning the Hebrew verb forms. They actually use this verb as an illustration of learning all the verbal of all the Hebrew verb forms. But it means to kill. Any way, shape, or form means to kill. Accident, on purpose, okay? Kill a dog, kill a person. Okay, that's what that word means. There's another Hebrew word, ratsach. R-A-T-S-A-C-H. Ratsach. This word means to murder. It means to take a human life unjustly, without cause. I should say without moral cause. And that's the word that occurs here. It is not katal. There's another word, H-A-R-A-G, harag, which means to slay. And it usually has a negative connotation to it where it borders on murder. Okay. But the real issue here is ratsak. That's what occurs here. It means to murder. It doesn't mean to kill. It means to murder. Okay, the command then is with a negative, you shall not murder. It is not saying you shall not kill. And people who jump on this and say, oh, you can't go into the military and defend your country because you shall not kill. But that's not what the commandment says. In fact, Israel, who was given this commandment time after time after time in military situations, killed the enemy. And God told them to do it. In fact, the psalmist writes, God has trained my hands for war. So it is, again, an example of failure to properly understand the Bible from its entire perspective. Murder, then, means to take a person's life when, from the perspective of anger, from the perspective of jealousy, from the perspective of selfishness, okay, to take it without moral cause. Is there a situation where someone might have moral cause to kill someone? Yes. Then it is not murder. Okay. Turn to Genesis 9. Verse 5. Genesis 9, verse 5. And 6. And surely I will require your lifeblood. From every beast I will require it, and from every man. From every man's brother I will require the life of man. Explanation, verse 6. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man. This then says that if a man kills another man, that other men are now justified in taking that first man's life. We call this capital punishment. Hud 9:6 of Genesis. This is God's instruction to society. This is in order to offset the pursuit of the moral rebel that we looked at in Proverbs. See, given we saw in Proverbs 29 that the person who is unrestrained, transgression increases. Remember that? Okay. So there needs to be some kind of restraint. If a person advances through his growth cycles, his human growth cycles, and becomes a moral rebel, the only thing that may deter him from expressing overtly his rebellion is moral or social consequences. If he knows that if he kills somebody and society gets him, then he forfeits his life, then he might not kill that person. He might think twice about it, or three times, or four times. You know what I'm saying? It's a deterrent. Capital punishment is a deterrent to murder. And where capital punishment is applied to other crimes, it is a deterrent in those areas as well. There are two ways that capital punishment is a deterrent. The first way is that the criminal will not do it again. Okay? So that certainly deters him. And the second is that when society sees the execution of the criminal, then society is given an awe and a respect for the authority of society, and they realize that their criminal activity will be punished, and therefore they will be less likely to do that criminal activity. But where that criminal activity is not restrained and not punished, then the people are given wholly to do evil. They They're not afraid of society. They're not. They know. Well, they won't be killed. They'll go to jail for a few years, and you know, and then they'll get out, and they can do it again. And a society that does not severely punish criminal activity is simply encouraging criminal activity to occur. There are other passages that teach the principle of capital punishment in the Bible. So if you ever hear anyone trying to say that capital punishment is unbiblical, you first of all go to Genesis 9:6, and you can advance on it from there. There are other crimes that capital punishment was the punishment for in the nation of Israel, but there are few examples where it was actually carried out. But in view of the progression of the moral rebel to the place of becoming a murderer, as we saw in Proverbs, I want us to look at a passage in, I believe, Exodus. And help me out, Dave, if you remember where it is. We're talking about the rebellious son. That's the one I want, and maybe it's Numbers. I always forget these passages till I want to. Yeah, yeah, but the question is, where is it? And I may have to just get the... Get this one here.
What is it, a story?
No, it's a punishment.
Was that the Numbers 14?
Well, I'm at Numbers 15. Let me back up to Numbers 14.
Verse 9.
And... No. So we'll just take a couple minutes here and look this up.
I've got a cross-reference somewhere.
Exodus somewhere.
It could be Exodus. It could be Numbers. Okay. Well. Pause, but it will be worth it. Okay, it doesn't help.
I paraphrase it. Grandma hands the stones to the parents. Yes. Grandma hands the stones to the parents. And this parents. Go ahead. It's orange highlighted. You highlighted it orange.
Are we on pause?
Well, no, the tape is continuing because it doesn't do me much good to pause the cassette because the CD just continues. It's important. I could paraphrase it, but it's important to read it the way it is.
I have a handle on the concordance.
We've got a concordance right there, too.
Yeah.
Okay. And we still can't play.
That's because we want it so bad.
Okay, this might be it. Yeah, right.
the book of what?
Moroni.
Deuteronomy 21.
That was my next guess.
You're just too slow, Gerard. Deuteronomy 21. And then we'll finish with this and we'll be ready for the next commandment next Monday.
Okay,
Deuteronomy 21:18. And we won't forget it. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother, and when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them. So that's the guy we've been talking about, right? Then his father and mother shall seize him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gateway of his hometown. And they shall say to the elders of his city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He is a glutton and a drunkard," in addition. "Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death. So you shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear of it and fear." There's the deterrent, huh? "And if a man has committed a sin worthy of death and he is put to death, then you hang him on a tree. His corpse shall not hang all night on the tree, but you shall surely bury him on the same day, for he who is hanged is cursed of God, so that you do not defile your land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance." So this is to offset the trend that Proverbs 30 was talking about. This also is authorization for televised executions. Okay? Show it on TV. Show the guy getting gassed. Show the guy getting electrocuted. Whatever it is. It's a deterrent. Now, we are not under the rigidity of this kind of instruction, okay? The church is never given this kind of instruction. To take their child out and say, "Hey, elders of the church, this son is a rebel." Elders of the church say, "Okay, let's stone him to death." Okay, this was practiced in some Christian sects. Quakers were known for very severe punishment, okay, on those who were rebellious against their standards. We are not under this in the church, nor is it necessarily something that a nation should practice. Remember, Israel was a specialized nation. But what we learn from this is a principle. Why such severe punishment? Because of Proverbs chapter 30. Because of what results if you don't nip this in the bud. And you're supposed to nip it in the bud early. And if for some reason the parents have failed and so they end up in this situation, or even with all that the parents can do, it still doesn't work. Then they come to this situation and in the nation of Israel, although there is no recorded incident of this taking place, but this is what is to be done. Now once you, at first, if I started with this, you'd say, "Oh my goodness, this is so terrible, this is so harsh." But having started with Proverbs 30, hopefully you can see that there is some reason to this because of the severity of the moral degeneration that can result. So the point is that we certainly need to take some drastic steps in the training of our children and in the cultivation of moral standards in the family. So anyway, honor your parents. If you're under their authority, obey them. And if you're out from under their authority, certainly respect them and reverence and appreciate and honor the role that parents have. All right, we'll pick up in that vicinity next time.